Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. This is Literary Viewpoints, and this is Fran Lewis. And it is absolutely delirious out there. It is gorgeous out there, and I have one of my favorite all-time authors on the show today. New York Times bestselling author Catherine Coulter is here, and we're going to talk about The Endgame. But if you really want to know about it, you've got to read it, because you won't be able to put it down, because I couldn't. Once I picked it up, I just read the whole book. And I'm a speed reader, but I read the book in like 2 hours because I couldn't put it down. So FBI agent Nicholas Drummond and his partner Mike Kane are deep into an investigation of the celebrants of the Earth, a violent group known for widespread bombings, woe, of power grids and oil refineries across the country. While investigating a tip about possible bombing plot, the Bayway refinery in New Jersey explodes. Nicholas and Mike race to the scene and barely escape being killed by a secondary vice. Now, there is a whole lot more because the COE launches a cyber attack on oil companies. Can you imagine? Draining their financial and intellectual assets. CIA agent Vanessa Grace, working undercover, tries to steal the tiny undetectable bombs invented by the leader himself. But we're not going to tell you if they're stopped. Nicholas and Mike, working with FBI agents, my favorite two agents, Dylan Savage and Lacey Sherlock, must counter each move and hopefully win. The Endgame, Catherine Coulter, is the author of FBI thrillers featuring Dylan Savage and Lacey Sherlock. Good morning, Catherine. How are you?
I am just fine. Thank you, Fran.
I'm so excited. You have no idea. And it's funny because when I tell people in every place I went this week, guess who's coming on my show? This is really amazing because most people know certain authors. Everybody knew you.
Well, this is wonderful.
Everyone.
You didn't have to pay
so
them off.
Excited. No, I didn't have to pay them. No, the waitress in the diner said, oh, my God. The guy in the jewelry store that I have to go to pick up something said, oh, my God. And my doctor, who doesn't read, said, you have to be kidding. I go, no, listen, tomorrow, instead of taking care of your patients, listen to my show. You'll just love it. They don't read. I mean, they read, but what can I say? So The Endgame is really fantastic. And the first question is, you've seen that The Endgame parallels reality. Was this intentional?
No, it was not. It was total serendipity, as many things
cool.
are in writing, I have found over the years. But we had J.T. Ellison and I, you know, we co-write this series. And, of course, you have to outline, and neither of us are outliners, but together we managed to, you know, come up with a plot, and we did outline this book very, very well. But there were huge, huge problems with it, but we got them all resolved. And again, it was serendipity, the peace talks with Obama, with Iran, and people have wondered about that. Did you guys have inside information? And all I can say is, well, you know, the book ended well, unlike reality, which is too bad.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, so it's very sad, because I think every sentient human being knows exactly what Iran is going to be doing with those hundreds of billions of dollars. Anyway, let's not go there. That's depressing. But it was all serendipity the way this worked out.
Well, it worked out really well, and I was really glad that I saw you at the Thriller Fest, and I was really glad that I asked to read your book.
Well, this is good. This is very good. Well, I'm glad you liked it. It moved very, very quickly. That's one thing about putting two writer brains together. The sky is beyond the sky. Pluto is the limit. Not even Pluto, the beta section of the universe. I mean, two writer brains together is simply magic. At least it is between JT and me. And, of course, every writing partnership is different. Everyone is different. But ours is a great success, and we are very close personal friends. And it's just been an amazing process. And the book for next year, we have already outlined it and brainstormed it. It's going to be more James Bond.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, and of course he is James Bond. He's son of James Bond. So it's mm-hmm. going to be pretty exciting. It's going to be called the Devil's Triangle. And
nice.
Yes, I'm referring to the Bermuda Triangle, which everybody is fascinated with, including myself.
Mm-hmm.
But it starts in Italy, in Venice. And as you read at the last at the end of this book, people see that Kitsune is coming back. Kitsune was the master thief in Final Cut in the first book. So this is really quite fun. We're having a very good time, and I'm so glad readers are enjoying it. And to be honest, when I started the new series, I wanted readers to buy in quickly. So Savage and Sherlock are in all of the books. Some of them to a greater extent than in others, but they play a very large role in this book as well. So the books now are really on their own now. You know, they're established, I guess is the right word. Would you say?
I would say yes, and I would love to read Final Cut in some of the other books. I've never read J.T. Ellison, and I don't think I met her at the Thriller Fest. I don't think I did.
Well, it's interesting because I'd never met her either. I had never read her. I didn't know a thing about her. But what happened, and it's so hard to believe that this was now 4 years ago. It just seems like yesterday.
Yeah.
Into my head came this plot and this family. His name was Nicholas Drummond. His entire family was there. Even the butler was there. I knew everything about him, but I knew that I could not write two big books a year. So I thought, well, hey, a lot of people are writing with other authors. And Clive, who has been a longtime friend, has written with four or five different people. So I called him up, and I told him what I wanted to do, and I said, help, tell me what you do. And we talked for quite a while, and he gave me absolutely great advice. I love the way he handled the financial end of it. It was perfect. And it was so cute, Fran. He said, well, he said, now I'm not cheap like Jimmy. And he was talking about Patterson. So what happened was I called all over the country and I said, recommend published thriller writers to me. And I also called my agent and told him what I wanted to do, and he was very, very thrilled. This is Robert Gottlieb in New York as Trident. And, of course, being a good agent, he said, well, you know, Catherine, I know that we would have a writer in-house that could do this with you. And I was going, oh, go away. Just be quiet, you know. Just stop pushing yourself. And so what happened was my husband, he picked out 20 books, and I read 20 books. And
oh, wow.
We took,
sounds like me.
Yeah. Looking for writers, and I said this was very, very important, and we took our time, about five months. And Fran, what's absolutely fascinating is that independent, we both picked J.T. Ellison.
Oh, that's amazing.
Which was
amazing.
I knew nothing at all about her, nothing, and her writing. Her writing was much more, much more exposition. Like, I'm very, very heavy dialogue. But
yeah,
it just didn't matter. I just felt an affinity for her, and so did my husband. So I call up my agent. Are you ready for this?
Go on.
She's with the agency.
Oh, that's so why didn't they tell you?
And her agent, Scott, I have known him for years. He used to be Robert's assistant. So the whole contractual thing, of course, was very, very simple. And I called JT and brought her out. She was very, very excited and brought her out. And we did the first book, The Final Cut, which is about the Koh i Noor diamond. Do you know what that is?
No, not really.
The Koh i Noor diamond is the huge diamond in the center of the Queen Mother's crown in the Tower of London.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And what happens is that for Elizabeth's bicentennial or whatever it was, she they had to pass a law in England, and this is true, to let the crown jewels out of England. Parliament has to pass a law. So they did. The crown jewels came to the Met in New York for an exhibit coinciding with the Queen's celebration. And the coin is stolen. And
oh, wow.
So, yeah, and both of these books, as you saw in the Endgame, it takes place over, I think, four days maybe. Well, the final cut is 3 days. So they're very, very, very fast. And it just worked out. And it was so interesting because JT wrote this first part and sent me the pages. And we have Nicholas Drummond and Mike Mikola Kane. And I said, well,
I love
them. Are these characters? Because they were in my head. And she didn't know who they were. And I happened to be in Florida with my sister in a shopping mall. And in the window of, I don't know, Prada or some such thing, there was this male model. And I said, hello, Nicholas. So I sent his photo to JT. And then everything found a place. She understood
wow.
the character. And she was actually the one who defined Mike, which worked for me because I had Nicholas and then she figured out Mike and then I bought into that. So it's been very exciting. The Endgame was probably the most difficult one we have done so far.
Really?
Well, every book, it's interesting because when you're working with someone else, it's not that you make every mistake in the world. I they're challenges basically, and we just had so many challenges, and you just work your way through them, and it's been a tremendous partnership, and I just hope it keeps going. So we are very, very happy. Actually, you should probably get JT on and talk to her and ask her about her experiences with the co-writing because you know she's the other end of it.
That would be great. I would love to.
She's very, very smart. It's interesting because again, she calls herself, I'm trying to remember what she said, a melancholy navel gazer. That's it. You know, in other words, she does a whole lot of thinking on the page, and again, like I told you, I'm about 80% dialogue. So she had to learn to copy my style. And she told me that when she finished that first book, she went back to her own book that she was writing. She's published about 12 books. I mean, she's a very established author. And she said she couldn't believe it, but that her dialogue had tripled. And she said, and the book went so fast. It was moved so fast. So she was very pleased. So it's really... You know, it's affected her style as well, probably for the better. So, yeah, you need to talk to her and get her input on this. But it's a whole lot of fun, and we're family now. You know, we live
in
family.
You're gonna have to tell me how to get in touch with her, or have her get
I
in touch with
will.
Me on my email. I seem to be very popular all of a sudden. When your phone rings when you're on the air. And all of a sudden, what was my doctor, the first one I ignored that, I forget. My brother, who I haven't spoken to in a while. Hi, Keith. And a publicist for somebody, I don't remember who. That's good. And we're going to figure that out afterwards. Okay, so this one, how does the title? I was fascinated because every chapter starts with a chess move.
Yeah.
And I can honestly say I can play chess and I lose all the time. But we do try. My nephews are really good at it, and I used to be good at it. But why did you decide that for each of the chapter headings? I mean, I was fascinated, and I didn't have a chance to look up each of the chess moves to see exactly what they are.
Okay. This was JT's brainstorm, and we didn't do it until the book was finished because she said... It came out 84 chapters, and she happened to be reading an article on the Game of the Century, it's called, between 13-year-old Bobby Fischer and Donald Byrne, a chess master, and this is in 1956 in New York City. And it was dubbed the game of the century. Not only is it excellent, but it's exactly 84 moves. So we thought, well, this is meant to be. And what happened was is that Donald Byrne realized that he lost the game about midway through. But as I write in the author's note at the end, because he was a gentleman and Fisher was 13, he played it to the end. So it's a very, very famous game. And do read the author's note, because it's amusing and it's also true. And I do like the very first little quote that I used up there. It said, Woody Allen said, I couldn't get into the chess club because I was too short. So it came about by serendipity, and it was JT's brainchild. And my husband is a chess master. And
that's nice.
Yeah, well, he checked out all the moves, made sure everything was perfect, and read over my author's note and made some changes that made it really, really sharp and good. And then we had settled on the end game, and it fits perfectly with the book. So, again, there was just one case after another of serendipity. Now, people could say, no, this all unfolded as it was meant to. That would be a nice way to look at it, and I like that. So, but that's how it came about, and I thought, well, let's just play the game out. And the my group of people at Trident, this is my agent's agency. They are brilliant. They're the digital marketing group. And what they did is we had a sweepstakes, and the winner won this beautiful marble chess set.
Wow,
so,
that is nice.
Yeah, I saw it. It was really, really quite pretty. So the book has done very well. It continues to do well, and I do like to hear from people very much. And, let me just add, Fran, that I'm on Facebook, and this is facebook.com/Catherine Coulter Books, you know, all one word. And I'm on every single day. I post every morning, and I read all the comments, unless I post a photo or something, and there'll be 1,000 comments, and I can't possibly get through them all. But people can always write and tell me what they thought of a book, or if they found problems, or if they didn't understand this or that. Or, and let me give you my reader email. It's readmoi@gmail.com, and people can email me and tell me about the book. I really like Facebook because you get instant feedback. Instant. And this is a wonderful thing. Yeah.
Yes,
and,
yes, we do. I put my book reviews there, and I'm going to later repost my book review for the Endgame for everybody to read.
This is great.
And all
only
this
if
information
it's good.
On Facebook. Yeah, they seem to find me no matter where I go. And I have a special, what could I say? I see that Marcia Casper Cook is on, and she's runs the World of Ink with Virginia Grenier. And she shared the link today to make sure that everybody knew that I was on with Catherine Coulter. But I was really so impressed. I just texted my brother, who just tried to call me, and I said, I'm on the phone with Catherine Coulter. Even he knows who you are. Now, that's impressive because he doesn't read. I mean, really.
He's lying to you.
I was like, okay, there's hope in the world, yes. I mean, how can anybody not know? And I mean, I was very impressed with myself because to work up to you at the Thrill of Us, I go like, okay, should I do this or not? But I'm really glad I did. I met the most wonderful people there. I mean, I was like standing in the same room with you and Alison Brennan and Joseph Finder, and of course I love John Land. He's like my favorite person in the whole world. The only person I haven't met is James Patterson, because he doesn't come.
He's an interesting man. I haven't seen him in years, but he's quite interesting.
Yeah,
he's
so
very
I've
interesting.
Been told that he is.
Well, for example, you know, he could be his own publisher. In fact, he has his own imprint.
Yeah.
And what he says he does is he has a big circular table, and he walks around, and he spends like 30 minutes on each project. And, yeah, I mean, you know, and there are people who select the authors. There are people who write the outlines. and people who edit, and it's an amazing process, and I think he does it very, very well. Very well.
Well, I'm reading his new one is Cross Justice. They just sent it to me. It's not out yet. This one is really good.
Who is it written with?
I think he wrote it by himself. This is a James Patterson book. It's an Alex
Cross
book.
So it's Alex Cross.
Yeah, and it takes you back to Alex Cross's hometown and the truth about what happened to his father.
Okay.
Mother.
Yeah, he always writes his own books, the Alex Cross books. He always does those. So that's great.
This one is better. Alert, the Michael Bennett book was good, and The Murder Room was okay. Anyway, so Savage and Sherlock are in this book, and of course, it couldn't be you if you didn't put them in. I love them. This allowed you, you said, to launch the Brit in the FBI series?
Yeah.
So keeping in, okay, explain that to everybody that's listening.
Well, as I said earlier, you know, I didn't want to I didn't want to alienate the readers, and I didn't want to, like, suck them on the side of the head by simply throwing out a brand new series. And so in the final cut, you know, Savage and Sherlock are even a little more heavily in the book than they are in the endgame. And then the books are published 2 months apart, so people can just segue right into it. And this is basically what happened. And as I said, I think now through three books, Mike and Nicholas are pretty well now established. So the next two books, the next FBI book, can you believe this, Fran? It's the 20th. The 20th. I know, that's what I said, too.
I have to make sure that I get it before it comes out so I can, you know, review it and publicize it and spotlight it all over the place, because people actually read what I write. It's amazing.
Well, I hope so. Otherwise, you're spitting in the wind. But this is very good. The name of it is Insidious. And as I tell people, you know, in the newsletter, now, if you don't know what that book means, it would be really smart to look it up. But it's called Insidious, and then 2 months later, again, we will have The Devil's Triangle. And this is the last, so that will be four books where they're 2 months apart, and then that will stop. And then they'll probably be separated by 6 months or whatever. And
well, maybe
the next
one, you and JT will come on together to talk about The Devil's Triangle.
Possibly could, sure. Yeah. That's an amazing book. It's extraordinarily complex, and it's very, very historical. When we were, it starts with Da Vinci.
I love that.
And it's about, have you ever heard of the Coath family?
Yes.
Coathe. Okay, they're the ones who were selected by God to be the only ones to carry the Ark of the Covenant. And this is the story of that family. And,
oh, wow.
I know. So it's extraordinarily complex. And you've heard of Nikola Tesla.
Yes.
Tesla is at the beginning of the 19th century, and he and I'd be up on the computer, and I said, JT, listen to this, you're not going to believe it, and would find a historical fact that fit right into the book, into the outline. It was amazing. So it's kind of like really, really the universe wants this book written. So it's about the Korah family. It's about the Ark of the Covenant. It's about this weather. I won't tell you anymore, but it's very, very, we'll see what happens. I'm just really thrilled about it. Very, very excited about it.
This is exciting. This is very exciting. And I love historical books, and I love looking up stuff about historical books. Whenever I review a book by Steve Berry, I constantly, whatever it is that he's writing about, I look it up just to make sure that I have his facts right. He's never wrong. He's impeccable when it comes to research, and most authors are, but, you know, here and there, I'd like to understand, you know, what it is that everybody's doing. So I will look, this is interesting. I love historical fiction, and if you're bringing in my favorite two characters, I've got to read the book before it comes out. So when you decided to co-author this book with JT, and who decides on the main plot and the storyline, and how was the plot divided up?
Well, what happens is Again, co-writing, the whole process is extremely individual. Basically, JT does most of the writing. I usually have an idea for the plot, and then we will work together to flesh it out. And then we put our non-outline heads together, and we plotted this book out completely. It's and JT says it's working so far. And then what happens is we talk on and off, solve problems, blah, blah, blah. And then I get the manuscript, and then I just go over it and over it and over it and over it and work my ass off. And then when I'm happy with it, it goes to my editor. And I couldn't believe it. With every book, she proves her worth. In other words, she will say, well, what about I'm not quite sure about this. And then, of course, you don't want an editor to say you need to do this and this and this. No, no, don't do that. Just tell me where there's a problem, and I will go look at it with a fresh eye and figure out what to do. I don't want to do what you want to do, you know, necessarily.
Uh-huh.
But she has been just amazing. And, you know, until you become God, there are always ways to make a book better, to make it sharper. That's why I hear about some really big authors who in their contract, no editing. Mm-hmm. Well, are you nuts? You know,
that's
for
crazy.
Heaven's sake, you're not God. And, you know, I'll let you know when I become God. But it is a team effort, and I have really a remarkable editor. This is Chris Pepe at Putnam. So that's how we work it.
You know, I'm a writing and reading staff developer before I retired when my mom was diagnosed with Alzheimer's. And I always told the students in my, you know, reading writing classes, you could always make it better. You could always add an extra adjective. You could always make it more interesting. You're never done. Writing is never really done. And they never realize that, because a lot of kids write composition and say, okay, I'm done. Well, you have to read it over. You have to edit. You have to understand that you can give it a little bit more so that people want to read what you write.
Yeah.
And that was I love doing that. It was so much fun. So how did I loved it. And you know what's even better is that, because you said Facebook before, a lot of my students are on Facebook. So if they have a birthday or they're there, or I had a birthday in September, and it was just so nice that they still love me. And I was the dean. Yeah, I mean, after 100 years, and they're like, we love you. You're the best person in the world. You're the best writing person. Of course, I love all of you. And I taught in the same school for 100 years, so it made it even better. And to know that they realized that I do love them, and that it, you know, what I did mattered, was even better. But I work with kids with learning disabilities, which was really fun. But when you decided on the title of the book, The End Game, what made you decide on that title? That is a great title.
It is, isn't it? I think it came to, I cannot remember. I think that I came up with that. And it just simply fit the book perfectly. So what are you going to do? You're going to use it. And, of course, Putnam loved it. And it just fit the book very, very well. We had more of a problem coming up with The Devil's Triangle. We went through a whole lot of titles till everybody was happy on that.
Well, who makes the final? The question I asked some of the Iris Johansson, even Sandra Brown, a while ago, is who decides on the back cover blurb? Because there was one interview that I had with Iris.
I do.
You did.
Of course.
You see, you're lucky. I had started to read something, and I'm reading the front, you know, the blurb of the book, and I'm saying, if I read this on the air, she's going to have a fit, and she's right. They gave away too much. That by the time I would have read it, everybody would have known who did it and the connection between certain characters. So I said to her before the show, I said, I'm not reading this because somebody made a mistake about this, and somebody made a mistake and put the wrong characters on the back cover of the book. And I was like, oh, my God, this is not good. Also, who decided on the picture on the cover? Do you decide? Or
yes.
Did somebody else decide? You did.
No. I have cover approval. And what will happen is the art director, his name is Rich Hasselberger. He is not gay. He is extraordinarily handsome with a flat stomach. And
oh, cool.
And yeah, he's immensely talented. And actually, there were a couple of covers in and out, and I said, nah. And he came up with that, and it's absolutely perfect. He also came up with a cover on the Final Cut, which is a hologram, never been done before. It is gorgeous, absolutely gorgeous. And interestingly enough, to show you how this works, they sent me the first cover for Insidious, the FBI book, this upcoming summer. And it was pretty bad in my opinion. And my right and left hand assistant, Karen Evans, came up with a solution and came up with a cover. And it's absolutely phenomenal. I haven't heard from them yet, but I'm sure they'll like it. So it's again, it's a team approach, but I have the final say. Just as yeah. And in one thing too, Fran, in terms of co-writing, you have to have one person as the driver of the bus, and that's me.
That's yeah,
You know, if
that's what I
there's
want to
any
know, yeah.
questions or problems, it's up to me. And that makes it cleaner. There are no questions. Expectations are established. So that's the way we work it, and it works very well.
Well, I like Nicholas and I like Mike King. So I am so glad that you're bringing them back. And they're going to be working with Savage and Sherlock again together, right?
Yes. Now we will see to what extent in the Devil's Triangle. I don't think it's going to be all that much because it's just boom, 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 boom in terms of the action. And so we'll see. We'll see.
That was the other question. How do you keep it so fast-paced and action? You see, I'm writing my 13th book, and it's a murder, a whole bunch of murders. Told from the point of view of the dead person behind the stone that did something wrong. It tells the story. But how do you keep, I can't write dialogue to save my toes, and I'm good at writing. So how do you write a dialogue that sounds so natural that it looks like it's just happening and people just say this, it just works?
Fran, everybody has their talents. You know what I mean? I mean, everybody has talents. It depends on what you do with them. Now, mine is I can't shut the characters up. They just talk, 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 talk. And in fact, I'm right now writing one of the three denouements in Insidious, and they will not shut up.
That's
So,
good.
the dialogue to me is far more natural. I will have to go back in and feed in more description and stuff like this. I'm very, very dialogue heavy, and it's just because it's very natural to me. It's natural as breathing, and the
See, that's
characters
a
are just they just again they won't be quiet.
Well,
And
are
that
any of the
sounds
characters
crazy, but
you?
it's true.
Are any of the characters you? Do you ever put
No,
yourself in there?
no, no, no,
No.
no, no. No, I'm
That's good.
crazy. I'm just crazy. But sometimes they talk. I type about 95 words a minute. I'm very fast.
Oh
Sometimes
gosh.
I cannot keep up with them. They're talking so fast, I cannot keep up with them. This happens rarely, but normally, you know, it just comes very. So that's something that's very natural to me.
Well, this book, The Endgame, was really interesting, and you created something in there. Who created the celebrants of the Earth? Who created that?
Well, that was my idea. I said I want this group, and you know, I want the main character to have undergone tremendous tragedy. His family were killed in the 2005, July 2005, terrorist subway bombing in London, and he had just gotten a Rhodes Scholar to Oxford, and his world changed over in a minute. And it's what happened to him, and he was a genius. So, you know, and I said, I like that celebrants of the earth, you know, blah, blah. So, yeah, again, you know, it just depends. Sometimes JT comes up with something like the chess game, which is extraordinarily innovative and imaginative. So that's why I was saying, you know, two author brains together is magic.
It's amazing that you work so well together. That is so great, and that you're able to come up with, you know, a plot, and then one person sticks to it. So who decided the ending of this book? It was really good.
Now, which ending in particular?
I'm not going to tell. You have to decide. You have to, whichever ending. I'm not giving away the plot of the book, people. You're going to have to read it.
There are two. For example, the relationship between Mike and Nicholas. I made that decision. In terms of the final thing, because you know these thrillers are international. Well, how do you justify the FBI going international? So we fixed that, and that was JT's.
Mm. Well, I'm glad that Mike and Nicholas have something going, and I hope you keep it going.
Well, I just wanted
done,
to make...
It was just done so cute and so adorable, and it was like, you know, she sort of got him. She sort of has him under her thumb.
The book is very intense, and they provided kind of the comic relief. They made it was light and fun and makes you smile, and that's what I wanted. You know, I didn't want anything heavy because their relationship is not like Savage and Sherlock at all.
No, it's definitely much different than Savage and Sherlock.
Yeah,
they're totally different characters. But before I forget, because I don't want to forget, my show on Thursday is not going to happen. This seems to have been a miscommunication, and the author was not told about the interview. So I'm hoping that Tanya Kappas and A Ghostly Murder, which her books are hysterical, will come on at a different time. But on Tuesday, internationally famous Alan Jacobson is going to take spotlight with The Lost Codex. And the following week, and this is mind-boggling too, is like Mike Bond on Wednesday, Killing Maine, and Brian Friedman, West 57th, he wrote a romance murder novel, actually. And he's coming on the 19th, and then Fran's taking some time off until January. So I'm excited. And for those of you that would like to know my picks of the month, everybody reads what I tell them to read. That's good. I always start with The Endgame by Catherine Coulter and J.T. Ellison.
I applaud that selection.
Without a doubt. As a matter of fact, it's going into my magazine as a starred review. MJ Magazine, MJ7, I hope comes out at the end of this month. I'm waiting for the publisher to send it to me, to send it to the editor. MJ Magazine is in memory of my sister, Marcia Joyce, and it's for authors, writers, readers, and anybody that wants to write an article about writing, anybody that wants to contribute, that would be really great. And we're going to have a speak-out section, I think, in MJ8, and I haven't turned on my controversial topic yet, but I've got one there. And tell everybody once again, what is next for my two favorite characters, Savage and Sherlock?
Savage and Sherlock will be out in probably July, and it's the 20th book in the FBI series, and it's called Insidious. And it's got two mysteries. You will not get either of them, I promise you, because it took me a while to figure them out. So you can't get it either. Then Devil's Triangle will probably be a couple of months later, and that's Mike and Nicholas.
Well, I hope you come and see me on
Facebook, because I'm on every morning, and I always read everybody what everybody has to say.
I usually answer too sometimes. I even saw your Halloween thing. That was really cool.
The newsletter?
I got the newsletter, yeah. I did get the newsletter. I was really excited about that. Yes, I got that also. But was there anything else that you wanted to add about the end game or the book or besides Facebook, where everybody could buy all of your 20 books?
I just want everybody to enjoy it. It's interesting the way it parallels what basically happened. Only as I say, you know, the book ends well, and I just hope everybody enjoys it because it's entertainment, and that's it.
I'm going to repost it later. And I'm going to repost the end game, and I'm going to repost all this other information because I really think that everybody should read it. And I'm a speed reader, but I read every word, as you could tell from my book review. And I read it, I got the book when you sent it, and I was so excited because it was autographed. And I sat down, and I have like 40 books literally inside right now too to review. And then I got this one. I go, I'll forget about this. This is coming up first. And then it depends on who it is. But I said, oh, I haven't read a Catherine Coulter book in a while. Oh, yes, I'm going to read this. And when it came, I just said, I put everything else aside. I said, just leave me alone and let me read. And I was so happy. And to write a book review about this, I took my time because I wanted to make sure that it spotlighted the fact that this was a chess game, of which I've got to get better at. Really, really.
All right. All right. Well, thank you. I'm very glad you liked it, Fran.
And
thank you so much for having me on.
Thank you so much, and I hope that JT will send me maybe the final cut so I can get an idea of her writing and your writing together with her. This is the
first
book,
the final
you said,
cut
right?
is our writing together.
Yeah,
just
right.
Like
this
the end
first
game.
One. Yeah, so maybe I can get you, someone can send me a copy of it, and of course, knowing me, I'll move it to the top of my list. And it would be really great if after the new year we can get together and we can do this again, so that I can get both of you to talk about the final cut.
All right, very good. Well, thanks so much, Fran.
Thank you so much, and have a great day, everybody. And bye.
Bye-bye.